Wendy's Coffee House. My guest is Jonathan Fink. Now, he's a prolific writer, a prolific researcher who covers the gamut from spirituality to baseball, hardcore baseball, I mean, stats, the whole nine yards, and music. I don't know where we want to dive off, but first, I love miracles, and this was the one I wanted to go with just to give people an idea of where how many details you find. When you were researching The Baseball Gods Are Real, and this is Volume 3, The Religion of Baseball, there's a story in there on miracles, and I love it because it starts out with Wayne Dyer. I am realistic. I expect miracles. All right. So here we go. A guy who is a mechanic, I believe, accused of murder. How did you find out about this guy who was accused and had to get off the hook with an alibi about baseball?
Well, first of all, Wendy, thank you so much for having me again on your show. It's great to be with you. And with regard to these baseball god miracles and all these baseball god stories, you know, I don't even know how these stories find me, Wendy. There is an intelligent energy that permeates all things in this universe and seems to have chosen me to write books about these subjects. And whether it's through my son who brings me a story, or I'll be just, you know, on Twitter or the internet, a story will catch my eye and I get kind of drawn in like a magnet. And it always seems like there's a purpose. And yeah, I mean, whether a baseball miracle is simply like when Aretha Franklin passed away and then they honored her at Comerica Park in Detroit, and in broad daylight when it wasn't raining, a rainbow appeared above the stadium and thousands of people saw it. Now, that's a miracle that we can all relate to.
Yeah.
The story you're referring to is a little more peculiar because it shows how our spirit guides or angels, the baseball gods, they're bending time and space. There's a story about a man, and I guess I can credit Netflix for this because Larry David has Larry David from, you know, Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. A documentary was put on Netflix about this story, but essentially this man was accused of murder and he was innocent. Maybe because of the color of his skin, they didn't believe him. And when he had to fight for his life in trial, he remembered that Larry David was filming an episode at Dodger Stadium for his TV show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he told the prosecutors he left the game in the ninth inning. And this is why he could not have been possibly at the scene of the murder. He was there with his daughter. And then when they contacted HBO production and they sifted through all that B-roll, they eventually found exactly what they were talking about. There was a particular shot where this man happened to be in the background as a bystander, and it proved that he was there. They even saw him getting up with his daughter to leave the stadium in the ninth inning, as he said it. So this is a situation where it's an absolute miracle. Because this man is now, was innocent and is now free, living his normal life. But without that divine intervention, without all those dots connecting, he would never have been able to prove his innocence. And we see these stories, and they happen, of course, in baseball stadiums. I personally get a kick out of it because I have a chapter about how baseball stadiums are like cathedrals. And just like how churches and synagogues and mosques, holy and divine moments happen, they also happen, you know, in the game of baseball. And by the way, not a miracle, but just a couple weeks ago, I was in St. Louis with my son for a baseball tournament, and we were in the St. Louis Cardinals game. And sure enough, a man proposed to his wife, and they got it on the big screen, and she said yes. And so everyone was cheering, and I said, wow, the baseball gods, you know, wanted us to really witness another baseball moment. But so maybe not a miracle in that case, but certainly a rainbow over a stadium, and the man being able to prove his innocence only because of so many synchronicity that led him to find the information that would prove his innocence is nothing short of a miracle. And whenever I see stories about me, my answer is always, the baseball gods are real.
Okay. All right. And see, I don't know. This is not work for you. This is like a labor of love. And there's a Kansas City connection too. And in that same chapter, I guess we'll just go ahead and do that right now, because this is an answer and something that when you connected with this guy, which was one of those things where I guess you're going to go out to lunch and you knew he was from Kansas City. You got a backstory. And I, since I don't know as much about this, and that's, I don't know how to pronounce his name even because yeah. I'm completely a neophyte.
I know where you're going with this.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The answer is Steve Fisiak. Uh-huh. Steve Fisiak has been the radio and TV announcer for the Royals for over a decade. In fact, he moved to Kansas City from California 2012, the same time I did. He actually moved with Rex Hudler, who's also the announcer of the Royals, and they were both with the Angels at the time. So interesting, but they got fired. And after a couple of years, they got hired by the Royals. Steve Fisiak, of course, grew up was born and raised in Kansas City. And interestingly enough, in his part time, he's an author. And when he released his first book, which was a fictional timepiece story about pre-fascism, Mussolini and World War II, an article came up on MajorLeagueBaseball.com. And so this was front page headline news, and the title was something like "Author Writes Book from Dream." And I thought to myself, you got to be kidding me. What?
Yeah.
And of course, I found a bunch of articles. I read the book, and essentially, Steve Fizyak and his wife, who, by the way, are both spiritual. They're both yogis, and they meditate and they pray. In fact, they both have read and live and breathe book, The Course on Miracles, which is about tapping into spirit and divinity and creating the best realities for your life.
Yes.
And essentially, he was on vacation in the summertime with his wife and had a prophetic dream. And he had a vision of this walled city in Italy. And he was able, in his dream, he had such specific details. And then, as fate would have it, the next day they were in Tuscany, approaching a new place to visit, a new town that had a winery. And sure enough, it was a walled city, and it was the city of Lucca. And as he's approaching with his wife, he turns to his wife and says, "I just don't believe it." But he told the wife the dream. He even wrote it down in detail, and it was a prophetic dream and a manifest. And what's so crazy is that dream, then maybe it sparked some kind of past life memories for Fizyak, because he was then able to write a fictional novel. And of course, fictional novels, you need such creativity. And you have to pull such amazing detail to create the texture, to create these stories and create the images for the reader.
Yeah.
And then he wrote a fabulous book called The Walls of Lucca that was absolutely inspired by a dream. And so, of course, after hearing that story and reading that book, when my first book came out, I thought, well, I probably mail some copies out to people, for good karma, just get the word out, network. And I thought, who would appreciate my book in the baseball world more than Steve Fizyak, a man who is spiritual and wrote a book about, some pretty paranormal woo-woo stuff. And so we eventually became friends, and we're still in touch. And I should also mention, synchronicity is one of these esoteric concepts that for me has happened for many years now, but I feel like it's been happening more and more for humanity, collectively. But when I first mailed Steve my book, he was on the road with the Royals. And in his free time, he in his hotel room writing the next book. And the next book, which, by the way, just was released, is a story about a native Indian who was a tracker as a young boy, but then developed a love for baseball. And so I mailed the book to Stephen. His wife gets the package, opens it up, takes a picture of the cover, texts it to Steve. And as he was writing a chapter about this native Indian learning to become a pitcher, he gets a text from his wife. And it's a picture of my cover, which is a picture of a pitcher kneeling down and praying, to the baseball guy before the start of the game. And so he had such a profound synchronicity. He found my phone number and called me, and we spoke for, several hours, and we became, kindred spirits, ever since. And so the idea that synchronicity is all around and happens, the first few times, maybe you talk it off as a coincidence, right? Mm-hmm. But when it continues to happen, and it happens in the most profound and unique and amazing and curious ways, at some point along your path, you'll have to ask yourself, are these all coincidences, or is this, divination, right, in action? And I'd have to argue that it is absolutely that. It's spirit working its magic, and it's there all the time. But as my daughter said, I have a spirit animal, the crow, and of course, now that I'm aware, I see crows all the time. And my daughter said, Dad, there's a yellow cab theory, a yellow cab theory. Once you see a yellow cab, you then see them all the time because your awareness changes. And I think that's actually okay with me, because what is the spiritual path? Really, it's an increasing of your awareness, right?
Yes.
And so as we become more aware of not just the yellow cab and the crows, it's all these little synchronicities where your spirit guides and angels are leaving you clues and hints and helping you along the way. And then once you realize that these things are not coincidences, it's guidance, then life is much more profound as you start to then live a life based on spirit rather than the 3D reality that we were born into.
Okay, we're going to take a break, all right? But we want to go into the next piece of the puzzle here with The Baseball Gods Are Real, Volume 3, The Religion of Baseball. Okay, what's in here is UFOs and ghosts. All right, that's why I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm on board. So we're going to take a quick break and come back and also get into past life regression with Jonathan Fink, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.
when a UFO shows up at a sports stadium, there are thousands of witnesses. To me, these UFO encounters are much, much more profound because, A, by the way, they're not invading us. They're not, you know, attacking us. They're just showing their presence. And sometimes they're actually entertaining us. So it's a really wonderful way for humans who do not have the perspective that maybe aliens could be real.
KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Jonathan Fink. What do you want to start with?
I'd like to start with the ghosts. You know, as a baseball fan throughout my life, I've always been aware of the baseball gods. It's a term you hear from coaches and players and sports writers and broadcasters. But Wendy, I was not familiar with the idea of baseball ghosts, right? Uh-huh. And amazingly, there are actually several books dedicated to the ghosts of baseball. Legendary stories of specifically in Florida at the Yankee spring training. The gardeners and the maintenance workers, the field guys would see, you know, the ghost of Lou Gehrig walking around, the ghost of Babe Ruth. And so this has been legend some time, and a lot of that stuff has been well documented in those baseball ghost books. And then even as a fan, I remember, about a decade ago, hearing stories about St. Petersburg, Florida and the Vignoy Hotel. When for some reason, baseball teams will stay at the same hotels over and over again. And it's curious because once you have a few ghost experiences, you have to ask when you're going back there. But but of course, the Vignoy Hotel in St. Petersburg is a beautiful 5-star hotel overlooking the ocean. So that's the reason why people teams want to stay there. But there have been, you know, endless, numerous, countless stories documented in articles, you know, in mainstream press about these ghost encounters. And so the thing with my book, Baseball Gods, Volumes 3, Religion of Baseball, I wanted to make it relevant for today. So for me just to rehash all these old baseball ghost stories wasn't really adding value to the baseball community. That's already been there, done that.
Right.
So in the last many years as a baseball fan, I've just been constantly a fan of the game, collecting stories. And my next story is that meet the criteria, it goes into a file. And that file becomes big enough, it becomes a chapter. So when I learned about the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I was very intrigued because the Pfister Hotel is one of the oldest hotels in America. It's a landmark in America, and it is a beautiful hotel. And in Baseball Gods Volume 2, I made a trip to Milwaukee for a playoff game. I spent some time at the Pfister Hotel, and I'll tell you, I spoke to lots of employees there, and you know, they wanted to dispel some of the ghost stories. For example, look, it's 4 in the morning, and it's a rickety old building, and you hear some noises. It could just be the pipes moving, right? It doesn't have to be a ghost.
Right.
But then he says, then this busboy, you know, this bellhop says to me with a straight face, but I'll be honest, if you walk around that 17th floor at 4 in the morning, you can hear more than banging pipes, right? And so that's when I was kind of like, all right, tell me more. And so I got a lot of interesting stories that validated, you know, the legendary rumors, but then it became mainstream because thanks to social media, where so many baseball players have Twitter handles and have Instagram, in 2018, by the way, these baseball ghosts must be fans of the Milwaukee Brewers because they always heckle the teams that come to town. And so they're rival, the St. Louis Cardinals are in town in 2018. And Carlos Martinez, nicknamed the Tsunami, goes live on Instagram, and he's doing a play-by-play update of his ghost encounter. And he's scared to death, and he sees a headless torso apparition, you know, moving around his room. He's absolutely terrified. He then called over to Yadi Molina, the all-star catcher, and there's a ghost in his room too. So they had to get together to fight off these ghosts. And basically, he's on Instagram saying, "Look, I'm in this hotel room with Yadi Molina and 4 of the players and 3 coaches, and none of them will go back to their rooms because they're all scared of ghosts. And we figured if we stick together and we all have our baseball bats, we'll fight those ghosts, and if we're going to go down, we'll go down swinging." And so that's when I realized that, come on, this stuff is not just happening in the 1960s and 70s, in the 1980s. It's still happening today.
Yeah.
So a lot of these stories were meant to bring back all these great legendary paranormal stories and make them relevant again, because just like spirit is real, so are the baseball ghosts. And so whether it's the Vignoy in St. Petersburg or the Pfister or, you know, Yankee spring training, the ghosts are there. Now, we can, of course, get into how the ghosts exist and why they exist, and that's a whole up in the bag of worms, but let it be clear that in the religion of baseball, ghosts are a permanent fixture, for sure.
Okay, now, the UFOs, because it's not just...
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where it gets even better.
I agree with you, and it gets better because now look, when Carlos Martinez posted the video, he's sharing that for thousands of people all at once. But a lot of times when there are these UFO encounters, you might see it might be a husband and wife by themselves and they see a UFO. And so when they retell the story, it loses credibility because it's just one person's opinion and there's no way to validate it or to vindicate it. So when a UFO shows up at a sports stadium, there are thousands of witnesses.
Yes.
So to me, these UFO encounters are much, much more profound because, A, by the way, they're not invading us. They're not, you know, attacking us. They're just showing their presence. And sometimes they're actually entertaining us at these events we'll all get into. So it's a really wonderful way for humans who do not have the perspective that maybe aliens could be real. I mean, here's an example where you have, you know, for example, let's look at this. 1950, Helena, Montana. 1962, Vancouver. Those were two minor league games where employees of the team, hundreds of fans, witnessed this, and then there was press, and it was well documented. So that's just amazing. There's also a really great story about Darrell Evans. Darrell Evans was a veteran player for the San Francisco Giants. His career was in a slump. He was kind of on the downward trend, and he was riding the bench. And then one night, him and his wife, and by the way, his wife was a stewardess, so she would know what an airplane looks like. They're on their back porch, and a UFO flew in, hovered, right? Kind of, as they said, kind of gave them a wink, like, hey, look at us, make sure you know we're here. And then did an amazing turn, and then poof, dipped away. And that story made headline news because he decided to share that story, you know, risking embarrassment or humiliation, people calling him crazy. He was so certain of what he saw that he shared that story. And so that was an example where it might have been just one or two people, but it got that mainstream news. But I would take it even further. These UFO encounters just don't happen at baseball stadiums. They happen at golf tournaments. They happen at tennis tournaments. And of course, maybe the most famous, now this one is not a relevant one, but it's just so great to mention, you know, in 1954,
yeah,
in Tuscany, Italy,
yes,
two soccer teams are playing. It's a sold-out stadium. So we're talking 10, 20, 30,000 fans. You know, and while the different fans, in hindsight, they recollect the details differently. Some refer to these orbs as cigar-shaped. Others refer to them as circular in nature, but they all describe them as being silver. Some even mentioned that these UFOs were dropping almost like silver confetti from the sky. And the game, a referee never even blew the whistle, but the game stopped because all the fans were pointing to the sky. Every player was looking up towards the sky, and the soccer ball, which was being kicked around, just rolled to a slow, gentle stop. And for 5 to 10 minutes, everyone just stood in absolute awe as these orbs danced around in the sky. And they didn't just, like Darrell Evans, shoot around, hover a few minutes, and shoot away. These guys danced around for a long period of time. And, I mean, come on, Wendy, this is just incredible stuff. So for me, this is another kind of baseball miracle or sports miracle because, you know, for people who don't believe in these paranormal things, when they happen, and of course they happen at, you know, in stadiums where there's many witnesses, boy, that really is compelling material, right?
Yes.
And so,
yes.
So it's amazing to me how ghosts and UFOs find their way into sport. And just like my books, you know, my books, yes, it's about music and about baseball, but it's really about paranormal. And woo-woo, and this is the vehicle to get people to expose to those ideas. And so these sporting events are the vehicle to help these people, thousands of them at a time, to awaken to this phenomenon. So it's just uncanny and amazing, and another baseball miracle.
Yeah, yeah, and this isn't a baseball miracle. My favorite, there's a drawing that Muhammad Ali, who said he thought that the UFOs followed him and were watching him, and he had a very strong connection to UFOs. That's one of my favorite just sports legends with a UFO connection. So, you know, there's more to it. Go ahead.
I did not know that about him, but that's really interesting.
Yes.
You know, especially because when we, you know, for people who are into spirituality, we always think about our spirit guides and our guardian angels as, you know, these beings of light. Well, what's a benevolent alien from the Pleiades? It's probably a being of light. So maybe it's an interchangeable concept, which is something that, you know, you would know more about than me. But I like the idea that if something is angelic, it doesn't have to be an angel. It could just be a benevolent alien, and that's good enough too.
Well, I want to go back into the reincarnation thing, and this is in the Music Gods Are Real, Volume 2, Religion of Music. You got a lot of great stories in there too. This is the power of sound, and sound will be the medicine of the future. An Edgar Cayce quote, and I think a premonition. Jonathan Fink, and more of the Music Gods Are Real, and more of the Baseball Gods Are Real. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest is Jonathan Fink. How many books do you have now?
I'm publishing my sixth book in August, and I've actually written 10, and two of those are fictional novels. So I'm starting to branch out into new material. But yeah, but this has been an amazing 5 years. I've written 10 books in 5 years.
Yeah. And I knew you before.
I'll never forget. We first met. You didn't know who I was. I was just happened to be sitting there, innocent bystander, and you were so in awe of the download that your guys were giving you. At the time, I was still very, very new to my spiritual path, and I actually started my path as an atheist. And so I leaned over very gently and politely and said, excuse me, who was talking to you? You know, it's so tanked, right? So Wendy, so look, you and I interacting was an absolute divine moment where my guys, I had to meet you along the way. Whether or not you were a radio show host that you became for me down the road was irrelevant, because you really played a synchronistic role at a very, very important time in my life. And so that then ignited this desire to learn more. And in my first book, I did a past life regression with Kirsten Harris Whitmill here in Leawood, Kansas. Mm-hmm. She uses the Dr. Brian Weiss method, famously from Many Lives, Many Masters, which, by the way, is the first book I ever read on my spiritual path. And by the way, that book was given to me by a friend and client named Pam Troy, who actually just passed away last month. So rest in peace, Pam Troy. I love you forever. Different than my second one, I was hoping to go back to some baseball stuff, and I wound up going back to a farm in Kansas where I was a sunflower farmer. And of course, in that second book, Baseball Gods Volume 2, I eventually found that farm. It's actually Grister's Sunflower Farm in Leavenworth. After that experience, being able to have a past life regression, have a very amazing vision, and then having my spirit guides give me all the clues to connect the dots to actually be able to validate and find the exact spot where I had that vision, was just incredible. And then I said to myself, all right, I have to do another one, because I only had visited one past life with that method. Kathy Bird, who wrote a book called The Boy Who Knew Too Much, about her son maybe the reincarnation of Lou Gehrig, every time she's done a past life regression, she's used the Dolores Cannon method with a man named Yaron DeWitt in Los Angeles. So I knew it was only a matter of time before the baseball gods brought me to Yaron DeWitt. We happened to have family in Los Angeles, and we were out there. So when I did a past life regression with Yaron DeWitt, it was much different than the Dr. Brian Weiss method. Several hours long versus an hour, full interview before, and it was very, very intense. And by the way, it was also done on video. So I actually have this on video, and believe me, when you look at yourself in that hypnotic trance, answering these questions, watching your eyes flicker back and forth, searching for information, it is stunning. It's incredible, because you can't believe that's really you on the video. In that session, I visited four past lives, and I think that's relevant because four has been my favorite number my entire life, and so it's always kind of poetic, these little links. While all those four past lives were very, very relevant and helpful to me on my spiritual path, one in particular led to my Music God series. And that was when I had a past life vision where I, you know, went through time and space, I came down from the clouds, and I found myself in a teepee, and I knew it was the Pacific Northwest, and then more specifically, I knew I was in Montana. And while I was in this little teepee as a little boy, I never heard any words. I never even saw anyone. I was alone in this teepee by myself. And then this knowing came to me that I did not have parents. They had died, maybe in a war, maybe some disease. And I knew that I was raised by the elders of the tribe. Then when Yaron took me to my death, I was actually able to live through it. Essentially, at 13 years old or so, I developed some kind of disease. It turns out it actually was, I believe, smallpox, because the U.S. soldiers would gift blankets laced with smallpox to the Indians, and then everyone got sick. Of course, there was no cure for smallpox. And so what do you do with a tribe where you have this personal kid who's going to get everyone else sick? You have to get rid of that kid to sick of the tribe. These elders built a better fire for me. They put me on the better fire. I literally could see myself as this kid on this better fire as all these elders are in their full gear, their faces are painted, and they're dancing all around me, they're chanting and chanting, and then they set this wooden bed ablaze. I remember not even feeling pain. I remember in the vision going up to this white light and then looking back down upon my dead burning body and thinking to myself, I'm free. I feel bliss. I feel the guilt gone. I didn't want to get anyone else sick in my tribe. I didn't want to be the reason that there was more suffering. I wanted to help my tribe. And you have to, in baseball, is a term called take one for the team. You know, when a pitcher throws a baseball and you get hit with it, you get a free trip to first base. You say, take one for the team. And I remember thinking, I want to take one for the team. I want to remove myself from the situation. I don't want to hurt anyone else. Well, of course, after that regression, I was so blown away. And of course, I became obsessed with Montana. I started to research a lot of stuff about Montana. And I was even connected with certain people that gave me more and more evidence. I gave a book to a dental hygienist. It turns out her husband read my book, and he spent 4 years living on a crow tribe in Montana. It turns out there's 12 tribes in Montana, but the biggest one was the crow tribe. Now, here's where it's interesting, because when it comes to animal totems, the legend has it that either you choose your spirit animal or the spirit animal chooses you. Well, when I worked in the music industry, I first toured Europe in 1997 with a band called the Black Crowes. Then when I got back to New York, I discovered a band that I eventually managed called Scarecrow Collection. Then I had this past life vision of Montana. And I'm researching all the tribes, and then meet a guy named Mike Lee. We have lunch. He tells me he spent 4 years living with Native Indians at the Crow tribe. And so now I knew where in Montana it was. I knew what tribe it was. And then the only matter was, how do I convince my wife to let me go visit Montana to kind of validate this past life? The same way I validated my past life when I was a sunflower farmer in Kansas in the 1800s. And if fate would have it, in a yoga session, I got the idea to write this music book about spirituality, and then it came to me, I have to interview a rock and roll band who's really into spirituality to make it work. And then at the time, my favorite band, and still is one of my favorite bands, a band called Twiddle. And I said, yeah, I'm going to interview Twiddle. And it seemed preposterous. And I threw out the idea to my friends and family. I said, well, good luck with that. It's never going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And then 2 days of prayer, and then Twiddle announces their winter tour. And they're from Vermont, by the way. And for the first time ever, they're coming up the Midwest, you know, through Kansas City, and then they're going to the West Coast and playing two shows, you guessed it, in Montana. And so I was like, oh my goodness, I gotta contact the band, I gotta go see them in Kansas City. But more importantly, I now have a reason to go to Montana. I'll go with the band. Now, of course, I had to convince my wife of this, and so I kind of, as I've done in my other book, I put it into a bet that seemed so preposterous. I said to my wife, I said, listen, I wanna go to Montana. I know you think it's crazy. Now two of my favorite bands playing there. I want to go to see them play. Maybe I could try to get an interview with Twiddle and interview them in Montana. And my wife was like, oh, come on, that's never going to happen. So, you know, well, let's make a deal. What if I get an interview with Twiddle in Montana before they even arrive for the Kansas City show? If that were to happen, it'd be a miracle. And surely you would agree, my wife, that the music gods have been real. Of course, she shook my hand, took the bet. And then a fate would have it, the guy told me to mail a book to everyone in not just the band, but their crew, the bus driver, the guitar tech, the lighting guy. And so I basically mailed a box of 12 books. And within a week, the manager reached out to me and said, hey, we'd love to be interviewed by you in Montana, but we'll see you in Kansas City in a week. We'll start the conversation there. And that is the genesis of my Music God book series, because how do you explain that these divine intuitions and the meditation and then the prayers, my prayers are literally answered. And then sure enough, Music God Volume 1 and then 2 is me traveling around the country with Twiddle. And then that leads into more stuff. In fact, there's a non-for-profit charity called Calling All Crows. And I was dedicating my first book, 10% of the money, to Twiddle's non-for-profit charity. And as I wrote the second book, I needed to find a charity to dedicate that to. And then I wound up connecting with Calling All Crows, and it turns out that was founded by a guy named Chad Stokes, a thing, you know, a pretty well known in the alternative music scene, you know, singer, songwriter who's in several bands. And I eventually connected with him and interviewed him, and he happened to be really into spirituality and reincarnation and who would have thunk it and animal spirits and totems. And so he's actually on the cover of my second book. And so my first book was kind of how the music gods helped me to figure out and validate a past life, and then the journey that I took with Twiddle. And then in book two, the music gods won't let me stop. And they eventually connected me with the Oak Ridge Boys and Joe Bonzo, who's another singer, songwriter, and author. And the music god series is really the rest of history, because I feel like the Music Gods planned my itinerary. In fact, Music Gods Volume 3 comes out this summer, and all those chapters were divinely guided through my daughter and her musical interests, or how I interacted with fans that I had crossed paths with in the past. And the Music Gods seem to orchestrate these experiences that time and time again become worthy of writing about. And so I'm grateful that the Spirit Guides have chosen me to do this stuff, and I take the job very seriously, Wendy, because I realize that my books, yeah, they're about music and they're about baseball, but it's really about synchronicity, the power of positive thinking, and tapping into the divinity that's all around us. And when you're unaware of it, you can't have the Holy Spirit flowing through your mind and your heart. But once you can tap into this intelligent energy that permeates all things, every day becomes a new adventure as you can start to instantaneously manifest the reality of your dreams. And so, you know, I've always wanted to become an author. I've always thought about it. And now here I'm doing it. And, you know, look, you can't make this stuff up, Wendy. It's a miracle. I have 3 books now in the Cooperstown Baseball Hall of Fame that my great-great-grandkid will one day come to visit my books. And I take no credit for this. This is God doing this stuff. You know, I mean, I'm amazed that Spirit can really create miracles. And if you can tap into this stuff and live and breathe it, every day could be a synchronicity, and every day could be a miracle.
Jonathan Fink, back in a few, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. You included some information about Wim Hof. Can you go into that?
You know, I think it was Tesla who said vibration and frequency is the key to the universe. When it comes to self-healing, if we're living, if we're eating low vibration food and drinking low vibration drinks and having low vibration thoughts, then your vibe will be low vibration, and that's probably how cancer cells and negative energy flows through you, and lots of bad things can happen to your body. Conversely, if you are feeding your body with good things, exercise, yoga, meditation, and deep breathing, you can purify this vehicle and then make harmonious music. And by the way, if each of us are an instrument, then collectively as humanity, we are an orchestra. So right now, look at our world. My goodness, we're playing some really loud, cantankerous music, okay? But maybe this is the kind of, right? Maybe what we're going through as humanity is the birthing pains of a new golden age, where we eventually will learn to get on the same page musically and make beautiful music together. So Wim Hof is a miracle in and of himself. I mean, this guy has set world records. He climbs mountains. He runs through deserts. But, you know, thanks to YouTube, he's become accessible to everybody. And by the way, a lot of this esoteric knowledge, I'm sure, was kept in, you know, sacred Tibetan temples. And this information has been kept away from the masses. And now it's becoming available. So with Wim Hof, he's particularly interesting to me because he is a spiritual guy. But what he's been able to do is bring his concepts down to the common man. And he's done it in such a way with his amazing personality and his integrity of character and his charisma, right, and his passion. He has literally woken millions and millions of people into his method. And even my own son, he watches his own YouTubers different than I watch. And his YouTubers are now interviewing Wim Hof, bring his information to the masses. And so the idea is when we are doing deep breathing and doing yoga and going for that 3-mile walk every day, you know, we're purifying this vehicle. And so my feeling is I don't care how you do it. However you do it is just get it done. Just get it done. But I also want to point out that the music that we listen to also has vibrational frequency. And if the music that we listen to, not just affects us physically with vibration, the lyrics and the tones and harmonies and melodies affect our thoughts. So if you're listening to, you know, death metal all the time, no disrespect to all those death metal guitars out there, right? But what vibrational frequency is now flowing through people listening to that music? Conversely, if someone's listening to new age music or, you know, Trevor Hall or, you know, classical music, when you're on your walk, then that music will have a vibrational frequency impact on you. And so the vehicle, you can purify it with your thoughts, you can purify it with your breath. You also can purify it with the music that you listen to, because the music itself has vibrational frequency. And so in those books, I say, be careful of the music you listen to, because the music you listen to helps create the reality that you're living in. So I recommend people to listen to really good music that makes you feel good. If it makes you feel good, then you're going to have good thoughts. And good thoughts help you create and manifest a really good reality. So music is so important on the spiritual path. And look, baseball is a thing where not everyone likes sports. Not everyone likes sports like baseball. But everyone, even a baby one day old, appreciates music, because music is innate to us. And whether it's because we know how to sing or because we've all lived past lives, we remember listening to that sing stuff for the first time, when you hear that music of the universe, we all can relate to music. And so music is another great vehicle for me to write about, because it can transcend and become a chosen course to deliver knowledge about spirituality. And believe me, I'm not here to spread knowledge like I'm some guru. I'm just a normal guy. What I am trying to do is just, because I am just a regular guy, share my stories, because if it happened to me, it could happen to everyone, because I'm no different than anybody else. I just tapped into this stuff. And by the way, I didn't tap into this stuff until I was 40 years old. I had to bump into Wendy Garrett at a float session before this all happened to me. And so when I look at my kids, who are well passing out at a much younger age, in a way I take great pride in that, because it's sort of like the family tree is evolving. And when I get to be born as my daughter's, you know, great-grandson, everything I taught my daughter, she will have taught to her daughter, and then they were taught to her son, and that person will teach that back to me. So I love this idea of reincarnation, and that we're all on a spiritual path in each life, but each life is interconnected. And so it's just it's the long game, right? And by the way, I have a book coming out called The Simulation. And the idea is that you play these baseball simulation games and SimCity and all that, and more and more humans are living in these virtual worlds. Well, maybe planet Earth is a virtual world, and we're all in a simulation, and it is a game, and it's a game of life.
Of all the things that you have done, the standout of this entire journey, one memory.
Florida, 2019. My son gets an invitation from West AAA. He gets invited to the U13 All-American Games. So he's considered, you know, one of the best 13-year-old ball players in the country. Now, in my first book, I have a preposterous thesis that my son could be the reincarnation of Hank Greenberg. Lots of clues, lots of hints. My first path of progression was actually to go back to 1938 to see if I was somehow related to Hank Greenberg. Well, Mason Hall is a podcaster who I became friends with after his best friend died. He had a baseball god moment. He Googles baseball god, finds my book, hits me up on Instagram. We become friends. I'm the one that first gets on his podcast. He's in Oregon on vacation while we're in Florida. And my son, it was day 2 of the tournament. He hadn't gotten a hit yet. My son took out Malibu and started to pray for his bat for good luck. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we started joking about the movie. We started joking about the movie Bull Durham. It was a commercial in the baseball game. We changed channels. The movie Bull Durham comes on. The next scene is the scene where the best player is playing with his Malibu, praying on, you know, his rosary, he's praying on his bat. And then I get the goosebumps. We're like, oh, baseball gods are real. And then boom, I get a text, Jason Hall. He's in an antique store, you know, the northwest corner of Oregon. And he finds a section that has old baseball antiques. And he finds a baseball bat from 1938, and it belonged to Hank Greenberg. How did a bat from the kid from the Bronx went up in Oregon? I have no idea.
Wow.
I said, Mason, get me the name and phone number of that owner. I don't care how much it is, I am buying that bat. And for literally $125, I would have paid $10,000. This owner in Oregon never got bat, and I won the money. And now my son has possession of a bat from 1938, and engraved in the bat is Hank Greenberg's name. You just can't make this stuff up.
Outstanding. And you are amazing. The stories you get, the people you connect to. One last note, I'll tell you, I got an email from Kathy Bird. It was a spam email. And then I got an apology from Kathy Bird saying, I'm sorry, I spammed you. How did she get my email?
That's just the baseball god, you know, pulling strings, because you must have to interview her. And by the way, in my book, The Middle School Years, which comes out later this year, is a chapter called The Dr. Oz Show, because Kathy and Christian during the pandemic were on an episode of Dr. Oz, and they talked about many children's past lives, and they did a feature with Christian, and it was riveting. And I write about it because, you know, again, I guess you could make this stuff up, but why would you?
Yeah.
The surreal paranormal world is even better than the reality of it.
The music gods are real. Baseball gods are real. Jonathan, all hail Jonathan.
So great to be with you again. May the baseball god and music gods always be with you.
Thank you. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, the website wendyscoffeehouse.com, and thank you for listening.